Welcome back, everybody. I'm here with my two dogs, Pancake and Noodle, and today we're going to do something a little bit different. So I'm still trying to figure out, you know, what exactly I want to do with this podcast, and I decided that, you know, a lot of things are going to be reviews, but every once in a while I might throw in just me reading a little story. I personally like to browse Reddit quite a bit, and one of my favorite subreddits is r/nosleep. These are just horror stories written by fans, and they could be kind of messed up sometimes, but something about them I really enjoy. So, you know, every once in a while, I might just find one that's relatively appropriate. You know, they are spooky, they are kind of messed up, but nothing too graphic. And I will try, you know, I'll read them to you guys just for fun. So with that being said, this no sleep story is, I administered lethal injections for the state. This is the man who made me quit. It's the same every time. First is sodium thiopental, an anesthetic, ultra short action barbiturate. Some will tell you that it's this that kills them. That is this that puts them under, and they've got no idea what happens next. I beg to differ. Men still whimper after the anesthetic. You could still hear their shallow sobs, half-mumbled prayers. I think this step is more for us than anything. To give us the illusion that we're doing a good thing. To give the impression that all of this, the dim lighting, the smell of bleach and vomit, the doctors smoking as they wait by the body bag, is humane. Then, saline solution to flush the line. This is important. Any contamination and the chemicals could react. You risk fumbling the execution, which can lead to an appeal or the subject walking free. Always remember to flush the line. Second is pancuronium bromide, a paralyzing agent. This stops breathing, paralyzing the diaphragm and lungs. You could hear this one, like someone's holding their body in a vise. Their breaths get more strained, raspier. You could hear the spittle drying in their throat and on their chin. No more prayers. Saline solution, flush the line again. Always remember to flush the line. Third and last is potassium chloride, a toxic agent. Sure, they wouldn't have a great chance at living anyway, but this is what really kills them. It induces cardiac arrest. Their body seizes, shakes, strains against the leather and plastic holding them in place. But within a minute or two, they're declared dead. I've been a state executioner for a while now, coming on 5 years. It's decent pay, sure, and as there are many who aren't willing to do it, who are willing to get really up close and personal, you'll often find that you've got a choice of where you want to live. If a state has the death penalty and administers the injection, chances are there'll be work for you there. For me, it's always come from a deep personal sense of justice. I was robbed of the chance at a normal life when I was just a boy. The media fetished this, called it the perfect crime, and TV was flooded with women and men who would say things like, whilst of course I cannot condone the murders, nor would I ever want to. There's a strange and perverse genius to them. A sense that a truly intelligent mind is behind this. I had to grow up hearing that, called on to talk shows when my voice had barely broken, asked to comment on the deranged genius behind the death of my family, the symbolism of the way he'd flayed their skin, asked if I had any clue what the words on the wall meant. I didn't, if you're curious. In my mind, there was no genius behind it, nothing symbolic. It was what it was. A man had broken into my home whilst I wasn't there, killed and dismembered those I held dear, pinning their skin to the wall like taxidermy models or butterflies in glass cases. There had been things that had seemed strange, sure. The fact that in this series of murders, he'd always write what the police were about to do before they did it on the walls, sometimes in blood, sometimes in black ink, things like 1529, Officer Norton enters building. 1530, Norton exclaims, holy shit. 1531, Norton retches. 1534, calls for backup. Sometimes there'd be little clips of speech, and first responders would swear that they were exactly what they'd said. I chalk this up to suggestible minds, to people not knowing what the fuck they're meant to think when they see a family of five cut apart in the living room. They'd want to misremember, to align their narrative with something bigger. They never caught him. They tried, but every single time he was one step ahead. They'd arrive at hotel rooms a day late, decipher clues, hours after the deadline. There were parts, too, they didn't mention. Darker things, insane ramblings, pages from notebooks with these strange drawings, figures reaching out past the page, rambling interior monologues. It comes and it comes, and there's nothing we can do. We are stuck. It comes. We are stuck. Move back. To move forward. It comes. There is nothing we can do. I am all alone. We are alone. Nothing we can do. The cycle continues. The cycle marches on, unchanged, always. Nothing we can do. There were vague connections between the families targeted. It wasn't just mine, although they were the first. I'd known the victims' families, memories that refused to show themselves no matter how much I tried. I remembered big get-togethers, the adults laughing and drunk, attending church together, services spoken in tongues, candles and glyphs and songs in Latin. Once I heard they'd finally caught him, I transferred straight away. More than a decade of waiting, and there was a chance I'd be the one to put the injection in my own way, have justice for what was done to me and those I loved that night. There were concerns, of course, and those who knew of my history tried to talk me out of it, but I was owed favors. Everyone in our field is owed favors. Turn a blind eye here, sign there, you'd be surprised what we let happen. I remember how he looked, how all these years I'd imagine him as a monster, hideous, slavering, desperate. I watched for a while through the one-way glass. He seemed familiar. The slope of his nose, the way he let his mouth come to rest. Even though I know they're mirrors, I swear to God he saw me too and smiled, broad, exposing yellow teeth. Maybe I'd pictured him all these years so intensely, every night in my dreams and every morning when I steeled myself for work. I couldn't see it in his face. Part of me just was not able to see it. He had a strange air about him, the sense of calm that only he disturbed, as if nothing around him could affect him because whatever had a hold over him was inside. His eyes were dark. He'd occasionally look around the room, close his eyes for a second, say something before opening them again, like he was checking for something. They usually have to wear hoods, but I made a special request to keep his off, so I could see his eyes roll back and turn white. Who was going to tell? He'd be zipped in a cheap body bag in 15 minutes, and everyone here had other shit to be getting on with. I left my hood outside as well. Entered. I had it all prepared. What I'd say to him when I saw him, the cool and detached way I'd deliver it, as if this didn't mean the world to me, as if he and his crimes were nothing, and I'd risen above them. But as soon as I entered, they caught in my throat. The guards on either side of him waited. He licked his lips. Jack. I wanted to speak, to reply, but I was powerless. A boy again, nervous and sobbing, held by arms I didn't know. Not allowed into my own home, but asked questions. No, I don't know if my mother and father had debts. No, I don't know who my next of kin is. No, I don't know why someone might want to hurt them. Asking to see my parents over and over again because I was so scared and I needed them. And every time being told I couldn't, and I wasn't sure why, but I knew that the panic rising in my stomach wasn't good. Couldn't be good. He continued speaking. You look old. Older. I told him I was here to administer his lethal injection, that in less than 10 minutes, he would be dead. He rolled his eyes. Was he enjoying this? I tried to be professional. If I couldn't speak, I could at least do my job, could at least kill him. I fumbled the needle for a minute and it fell onto the floor. I had never, in all my years, fumbled before. Never. It was a point of pride for me, steady hands. My heart stopped for a moment, but the casing was still on. I could breathe. As I came up, I met his eyes again. You always do that. A beat. He continued. Every time. As if he knew what I was going to do before I did it. As if, I thought, for a brief moment, he'd done this before. He started speaking as I pushed the anesthetic in, and I thought for a moment it was a prayer. But when I began to be able to pick up words in the sterile silence of that room, I realized he was speaking to me. It was like he'd have moments of lucidity and then lapse into madness again. "Good luck, Jack," he was saying. "It's up to you now, and it's over for me. I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I'm free. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Jack. It's you now. No choice. You'll know when you know. And it's you now, Jack. It's always you. It's always us." His words were cut short. He bit his tongue. The bromide had entered his bloodstream. His lungs and diaphragm stopped working. I could hear the last of the air leak from his mouth, his throat. He jerked back, and with his last breath, his head lolled back as if relaxing. And I swear to God, he smiled. I went home feeling strange, unfulfilled. I thought this would be it. This after my life would be somehow fixed. That days would seem brighter, and the evenings longer, and less lonely. But there was nothing. The trailer park I lived in stunk just as bad. Roaches still scattered when I left, turned on the light, and I was still empty. Maybe I thought it was because of the way he'd acted, as if he'd wanted to be caught, as if this was some game. Maybe it was what he said, somehow implicating me in all this. I could still hear his monologue, rambling, repetitive, but somehow so urgent, so desperate. And I knew it was true. He hadn't just wanted to be caught. He'd wanted to die. Mark called, a friend from prison. He knew the execution was today and was checking in. Rough day, huh? Sure, yeah. Heard it was a weird one for you, Jack. I sighed. He'd probably heard about the weird monologue, about the repetition, about the fact he knew my name. Yeah, it was. He knew my name, kept rambling in these weird whispers, said it was me now and he was free. And I paused, took a breath. It was fucked, man. It was fucked. Mark seemed confused. I didn't know about that. My heart skipped a beat. Why had he called if not that? The guy said it must have been a hard execution for you. Why is that? You don't know? Jack, they said the guy looked just like you. So that's just a glimpse of what these stories are really about. You know, they're a little weird, a little spooky, and sometimes they just don't have a definitive ending. And I think that's what I like about them the most. You know, some of these do include, you know, monsters. They do involve, you know, the supernatural, but some of them are just bizarre enough to possibly, you know, hint at being like a real thing. So, I mean, I encourage you, you know, if you're looking for something to do, there's a lot of things on Reddit you can find, a lot of good subreddits, and, you know, some of them are, they do have, like, fictional stories, but then they also have, you know, these fictional stories that are more horror-oriented, and I highly recommend those. I apologize for the cursing. I was just reading the story as it was written, but, you know, going forward, I'll try to clean that up instead of reading it straight, you know, verbatim from there. I hope you guys have, you know, a great rest of your day. And I hope you guys are staying safe. And I look forward to entertaining you in my next episode.